Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Tom Fenwick-Smith, thank you so much for joining us today. So we know you at Label Sessions as someone who's an award-winning creative with deep roots in the film industry and someone that's worked with some amazing agencies and also is now kind of heading up in-house agencies in like big telco. So could you take a minute to introduce yourself to our audience and share a bit on kind of what's keeping you busy right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Tom. As you mentioned, I was kind of born out of the film industry. I wasn't really traditionally educated in, I didn't really get on with it. So I rolled into the film industry with the ambition of being a director, wanting to tell creative stories. I found myself being an assistant director, which is very different and much more like being a sergeant major. But it really taught me the mechanics of how film works. Because you had to do things on a schedule, you had to plan ahead, lots of different creative problem solving on the fly. So it was very helpful, but that wasn't the career I wanted. And I ended up rolling into an incredible institution called the SCA 2.0, which is still around today. It's probably the world's biggest award-winning ad school. And from there, I discovered that actually I really loved the creative world and marketing and the kind of the freedom where kind of art and business meet together. And I had the sort of brain that was able to think laterally. And so for the first time, I felt from an educational point of view, what I was learning from them, like it felt like a real benefit to me. And then I ended up doing, you know, winning a few awards off the back of my student days, going into places like Google and a fantastic agency called Poke, which is where I called my home for a long time. And then moving on to more experiential agencies like Jack Morton and innovation agencies like Rewind, who are now called Magnum Opus. And all of those things, I kind of gravitated towards social, digital and innovation just naturally. I think new shiny things were always very attractive to me. So whether it was VR or whether it was, you know, connected like Internet of Things style stuff, that sort of stuff, that way you can kind of hack people's behavior and create stories around it, and now content around it really is kind of what I've really enjoyed.
Amazing. And I think that's something so interesting in the making of work. I really liked how you framed saying I was interested in the kind of shiny things. And what I take from that is this mix of kind of a culture, technology, the art, the possible. But when it's like a big shiny new thing and it's not mainstream yet, I think there's a really powerful role of creative leadership to think about actually translating what we can do to what we should do and what we will do. And I think that the creative leadership of the work and of the craft, I think, is really interesting. You've been doing this in many different agencies. You've mentioned that you're kind of a background in film too and kind of a leading in-house kind of agencies as well to do this and realize change. I feel like, as someone who's not in this world, it feels like a really delicate kind of a balance, like creative leadership. And I'm really curious, like you've done this in so many different places. What does creative leadership mean to you and how do you do great creative work?
Creative leadership, I often think about it in kind of different centric circles that kind of radiate outwards and you kind of have the bigger desires in the middle of the individual. And I think when you're working with younger creatives or with a creative team, it's often a lot more personal than a more managerial role. Who they are as an individual and what their interests are will normally be the gold dust that allows them to create the great work, and giving them the platform to be able to express that is incredibly important. So I think as a creative leader, there is a degree of having to protect them from the day-to-day corporate surroundings that kind of exist around them, which are important. But I think for some younger creatives, they need to be able to obsess over things. They need to be able to feel comfortable. They need to be able to feel that there isn't really a wrong answer. Like you can express yourself in any way that you feel comfortable to get your idea across. And, you know, I've seen young creatives like fantastically, they put on like small theater shows or they'll put together a video and, you know, it, self-conscious people would hate, you know, that they do feel self-conscious about it, but it's brilliant. It's engaging. You can see the magic in the work. And I think that that nurturing that as the individual is really important. And if you take another step out in that concentric circle, people outside watching them do that and enjoying their work is fundamentally important to building a good culture. Because if people see other people enjoying their work, they want to be part of that culture. And I think that that to me is like, that's the real core of how you can create creative culture and then great creative work off the back of it. Because the circle outside of that is the business bit. It's the hard bit, it's the numbers bit, it's the bigger strategy for the corporation or for the business. And those things, although incredibly important, don't really get young creatives to be enthused. You know, that's not the thing they want to do, but they do want to feel special and they do want to feel like what they're doing really matters. So I often think in kind of a couple of ways, creating a creative culture is a bit like being a band of pirates. Like you all have a common goal. You're kind of going slightly against the tide, but you're all in it together and you're hunting that treasure, right? And then you've got the Royal Navy and all the kind of guys outside that are kind of pushing against various other different bits. But your little band of pirates, you're there sailing the waves, doing the great work, often being the underdog, often being the smallest voice in the room. And I think as a creative leader, when they're the smallest voice in the room, but they really believe in it, you need to believe in it with them too and be able to give them that platform. And I think then you see people flourish. They really come to life and they do great work off the back of that, of feeling that self-confidence.
So before we go into talk about like the, I guess, the culture for creatives, you said something really interesting to me around the gold dust for young creators in particular can be the things that they're really passionate about. I remember when I had my like first job and it was in consulting and I had this amazing boss and he said to me, if you're not broke by the end of the month, when you've just moved to London, you're not doing this right. You just need to go and experience everything that the city has to offer. He was from a small village too, like me. And he said, if you're not broke, you're not doing it right. And I remember thinking, that is at odds from like all the sentiment and advice I've ever heard, but that is really right. And it was really nice to always have like permission to go and explore and just kind of enjoy the city. And because, you know, that's what life's all about. And that story came to mind when you're talking about what makes people special, the thing that they like. So I guess, how important is it for people to really cultivate their passions alongside work? Because not everybody has the opportunity to, you know, get paid for the things that they love.
I think often, because this job in general, because it's this place where art meets business, it can be quite overwhelming sometimes. And not overwhelming, but there is a lot of rejection for things that you love. You know, you can really care about something and people can trample all over it and not see the same value in it. It takes a degree of resilience and time and guidance from other mentors or people that have kind of seen it to allow you to be able to, or me as an individual, this is how it worked for me. I don't know if it works for everyone like this, but to build up that resilience and that kind of thick skin towards that. And that's kind of part of the job. The thing that really helps you get through that is not only your passion, but I'd also say find obsessions. Find obsessions which are odd. Find things that are strange. And, you know, find new ones all the time. I have so many weird little oddities. Every time I get a 50p, I look at it because for some reason I've become obsessed with the different things on 50p's now. And then I check the price and then I've started following like coin people. It's really nerdy, right? But it's this sort of stuff that I think gives you a reprieve from the noise. And I don't know, there are other obsessions that I've got as well, and passion. There's a fine line between passion and obsession. And I think in that middle bit where that bit lives, that's where the real magic is. And like those obsessions turn into things. You know, the amount of times I used to be really obsessed with Jim Henson's puppetry and animatronics and stuff like that. And we ended up building a massive animatronic head for one of our clients that came to life, and we did the voiceover with it, and it whistled Daisy Daisy from Stanley Kubrick's film. Oh God, I can't remember the film. That's embarrassing. Anyway, whistled this incredible tune from Stanley Kubrick's film. And that sort of level of detail I was able to put into that wouldn't have been possible without an obsession I thought was useless. So all of these things, and I think being a creative, your influence comes from everywhere. You know, people talk about remix culture, taking other things, great artist steal. There's all these kind of different acronyms, but really it's about taking what's around you and putting it together in a unique way. And the more stuff you've got to put together, I think the more you'll find reward in your work, and you'll be able to put up the rejection or the put down of those ideas. And I think of nurturing a team, nurture obsession. If there's a strange gallery, I went to a performance of a French mime group at the Barbican, something I've never done, but it was the only ticket available, and it was our first date night. And I have to say, I've become obsessed with these two guys who did the most. It wasn't mime as I understood it. It was projecting of little figures, and they were playing music in real time. I never would have gone to that. And it's the most creative, beautiful thing that has inspired me ever since I saw it. And so I think as a creative leader, again, back to the culture, pushing for galleries, pushing for things, pushing for nights out, pushing for, but make them interesting. Don't just go to the pub, go to, you know, the galleries, go to the different things, get people to come in and do talks, like find those little obsessions and nurture them.
Oh, I love it. One of the benefits of living in Edinburgh is the festival in August, because it gives you the opportunity just to soak up so many things. And I think it's so important to kind of, I guess, like feed that creative brain. But you mentioned earlier around like the different circles and the importance of kind of a nurturing creative. I'm curious if you've got a view on if creative communities within kind of a bigger enterprises need to have their own like distinct identity and culture, like even if it's kind of a, I guess, adjacent to that or a build on the one of the kind of a bigger organization. Because I think there's something really kind of complex in that creative role. As you've kind of said, lots of things end up on the cutting room floor.
I have a personal point of view on it that I kind of believe a degree of a separation of church and state can be quite important, because I think the role of any good agency, if you hire them externally or internally, is not to tell you the thing that you want to hear, but to show you the thing you need. And I think with that, there comes a degree of needing to be upfront, honest, and slightly separate. I think best in-house agencies kind of allow for this and kind of work quite well towards this. You see some great work coming out at the moment. In-house agencies are really growing in popularity, and I fully understand why. I think the scope for brilliance is huge. Like the possibilities are massive within in-house agency. The ability to be that close to a brand and understand them and build a really personal relationship with people you work with, who you would normally call clients. And they still are clients, but they're also co-workers now, right? So you can meet them in a very different way is huge. I think also the reason that sometimes there's a good degree of this separation is, as I was saying before, if people see you working and you're having fun, they kind of get jealous. And that jealousy is not necessarily a negative thing. It's a positive thing. It boosts culture. It boosts the want to be part of that and to be involved. And creative agencies that I've experienced, the best ones do the best work when the people are having the most fun. And that doesn't mean not doing the work, but that means a solid culture where you're all behind it. And it comes back to the pirate ship thing again, right? Where you're all on a common goal, you kind of share interests. It's a bit like an odd, awkward family, but you know the eccentricities of each other and you kind of play on them. I come from a family where I'm one of three and I'm the youngest. So I really activate against being an annoying little brother, and I'm nearly 40, not necessarily the right thing for a senior member of the team, but that kind of fun is still really important in the workplace.
Let me ask you this, because we've talked about the culture of the team is so important, and I'm quite curious around the process of creating good work. And I guess when we're talking around nurturing creativity and allowing personalities to be, because when people are happy at work, they do the best work, especially in the creative role. I guess reflecting, I think creativity can be quite subjective in nature. You've got those kind of concentric circles you were talking about. But how does culture that enable and help, I guess, the critique process and the feedback process? Because ultimately, I guess the critique and feedback leads to better work. But how do you do that in a way that is kind of good for people and good for the work?
I think I talk a lot about positive creative conflict. This is why the sort of traditional model of copywriter, art director was so successful from Birnbach onwards, right? It's, there's, behind closed doors, there's a not married, married couple arguing about something, but coming to a resolve where they've kind of been through everything. And a lot of that comes through trust and honesty. So those conversations between a creative partnership will often elevate the work, right? And then you show it to a creative director, they have a similar conversation, the back and forth. And that kind of conflict, as long as it's done in a trusting environment, elevates that work. And I think that is, again, it comes back to formulating that trust, that there isn't a wrong answer, there's just getting it better, right? And how you can get there.
What I'm taking from what you're saying is, it's actually, there's so much goes behind the scenes, as in the people are having the conversations, and if they're having fun and they can acknowledge that pirate ship of dysfunctional family, they understand kind of their roles and it happens. And I guess from an outsider in like the last concentric circle, they have to sort of be comfortable with just letting things happen. But maybe I'll ask you something differently. How does it feel for you creating creative work? Like, when do you know it's good and when do you know when you need to stop? Knowing when to stop is really the sign of a lot of confidence and not overworking something. Because say for painting, at least in my view, when you overwork it, you can tell it's like too fussy or it's not free and it's not saying something, at least in my view. And I just wonder, like, what is it? I just imagine it's a bit of a roller coaster. I'm not in a creative role, so I'm asking you all the awkward questions now.
It is. And I would like to say I had 100% hit rate. I definitely don't. You know, sometimes I'm wrong. And as I've gotten more experienced in kind of more of a leadership role, the sort of bit of advice, like being a younger creative is often, as I was saying, about obsession, and it's about drilling things through and hammering kind of stuff through. And that's kind of where you're at, because you are full of passion. And I think as you become more senior, or certainly in my case, I've become more senior. I still have the same passion, but I've probably learned to hold the sword with a gentle hand rather than a firm hand, right? And that gentleness allows a better flow state and a better listening state, which kind of creates a little bit more calm. But creative work is always a roller coaster, and that's kind of, I think, partly why we love it. Even the bad bits make the good bits better, you know? It's an up and down process. Where you can become incredibly passionate and fall in love with something because it's a beautiful little thing. And then it gets morphed in something else. You're not happy. And then you pull it back and then it goes that. And there's constant feedback and all sorts of bit. And that, you know, the role often of the creative is to keep that thing that made it special there. And that's kind of the wrestle. But I've often found if you try and force that hold, you'll lose. If you hold it gently, you may improve.
We talked a bit around being in-house agencies, where kind of in old world, if you were in an agency, they'd be your kind of a client. So they still are, but they're also your co-workers, and that kind of a slightly different mix. I'm curious around the importance of, I guess, brand and mission and purpose, and how that can translate to the in-house agency's work.
When you work in a creative agency, the culture is, because you have so many different clients, you forge your own culture, right? And you know, if you look at the differences between the big dogs in the world, like even Ogilvy and Saatchi, you can totally tell there's a difference in culture between those two. Now they're kind of two institutions, or Droga5, or you've got the BBH, you know, all those kind of different ones. They very much have a culture, and sometimes if you go to the pub, you can spot that definitely BBH, definitely Ogilvy, you know what I mean? I think within the corporate structure, especially within a bigger marketing department, what brand purposes develops into the culture. So whereas in a creative culture, your agency builds that around the people and the contemporary bit, I think the first port of call within a marketing department is that brand, what the brand is and how it kind of represents and its kind of tone. And you can feel it come through the marketing department and the work and the people you work with. And that kind of, for me, in my experience, seems to be the first starting point for setting the bar for the culture around it, because everyone's kind of uniting towards it. So it's always playing in the subconscious tonally.
What do you think that, I guess, the parent company can learn from the in-house agency?
It's a two-way street, this. So I think both can learn a lot from each other. I think the thing that the in-house agency can really understand is a better understanding of the brand and the politics that go behind that from a marketing point of view and a cost and a spend, why decisions are made and how they're important. And I think from our end, as I mentioned before, I think that there is a, we should give you what you need, not what you want. And so the management of that requires a huge degree of trust. So when building an in-house agency, it can often take a couple of years to build that level of trust to be on that kind of level par where, yeah, you are our client, but we are also contemporaries and we do have your best interest at heart. Now, they may come at it from a totally different point of view, which is more business dependent and coming from another point of view, which you need to fully respect. I think in terms of other things that they might be able to learn, the diligence that goes into creativity is often underestimated. So the level of strategy and thinking and thoughts that go in, when you present them back on three slides and you've simplified it, so you've put all this complexity and made it incredibly simple, that's often mistaken for easy. And I'm not saying that, like, not everyone can do creativity. They can. But I think there is certainly, it's an art form. And I wouldn't say I've got it 100% right, but distilling the complex into simplicity is an art.
And it's so interesting, the storytelling of creative to make the complex simple. So that great creative lands.
And I think it's what you were saying earlier about learning when to step back from the painting, right? And, you know, that's just an incredible ability to be able to look at something. I've worked with a few people who have got that eye and they just go, no, it's done. Don't touch it anymore. And you're like, oh, it needs this. It doesn't. Leave it. It's good. It's really good. Leave it. And it takes confidence. It takes a little bit of madness, you know, and a lot of self-belief.
Tom, I'm so excited about seeing some of like your creative and outputs in the outside world. Can I move on to some quick fire questions? Because I just want to be even nosier. Can you describe your taste in interior design for us?
Bric-a-brac. I have obsessions. And I don't think they're unhealthy, but I'll become very obsessed with a particular form of art. So then I'll buy loads of art. I don't have any wall space left. I love, like, if I wasn't doing this, I would 100% now be an antique dealer. Like, 100%. There's nothing I like more than picking up something old and understanding its story and like the history behind things and the craft ability that goes into it. So if I had my way and I kind of had my house, it would be full of shit with a story behind it. It would just be full. Everything I could tell you, this is a story because of this was the last thing this person held before X happened, or, you know, that's what I love, is things with a story that can tell it back to you.
What was the first work thing you were really proud of?
Like, when I worked in the film industry and I managed to get a few gigs working, you know, just kind of helping out. And I worked on like Ridley Scott films. I did one of the Christopher. I was really proud of that and being able to see that. Now, generally looking back on that, I was very proud. I was only like 21. So for me, that was a huge deal. Looking back, my part in those things was small, but I was very proud of those things. The first bit of work which I did in this industry that I was incredibly proud of was building this giant robot head for a company called Here East, which was part of the Olympic legacy after 2012. And they took over these huge buildings. They've now turned it into London's biggest, or I think the UK's biggest tech campus. It made me Europe's actually. And it's all based off a hard line, you know, hard wire connection for the internet. So it's super speedy. And it was all about bringing in makers and people that could kind of change the face of what our economy was. Here East has gone from strength to strength. It's an incredible success. It's calling itself in kind of, there's a lot of different people working out of there. And we created this robot head to deliver this kind of rousing speech. And I think it set the tone for what Here East was all about. And again, it was a great example in doing something for real rather than special effects, right? Actually building this head. And the process of building that was the thing I was the most pleased with. I wasn't the one who built it. I found an expert, an incredible man called John Noland, who's gone on. He was an incredible mad scientist of a guy who lived in Hackney, and he was wicked, and he just used to build these animatronics. He did great stuff for like Uncle's music video. I think it's gone on to do Star Wars and stuff like that, you know. And one of these people you find and you're just like, you are just awesome, like in your, you know what I mean? And the process of that was just incredible, and you walked away with a half ton head.
Amazing. And What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
There's a few things. So it's not who you know, it's what you know about who you know, which I think is an incredibly valuable thing to know. I think it goes back to understanding the motivations behind people's desires when they ask you something can often be quite helpful. The other thing which I kind of swear by now is if it was easy at the beginning, it will be hard at the end. And if it was hard at the start, it'll be easy in the end. So I think that that's something that I pushed through a lot of my life. I started practicing Muay Thai, which and boxing in my later life to try and get fit. I'd never done anything like that. And I think in my younger days, I would have said, this is too hard, I'm walking away. But I have to say now it's the thing that brings me the most pleasure. And often it's the most difficult and most painful. However, the cumulative value that it brings me like almost hits on a spiritual level. When you're doing work like this, you turn your brain on a lot. You need something to turn with your body to be able to exercise that a little bit. And if it was, you know, if it was easy, everyone would do it, right? And I think that's the point. It's difficulty is actually a beautiful thing.
Last question is something we ask everybody. And on a scale of 1 to 10, Tom, how weird are you?
Oh, mate, like, I think we've covered this, like, quite high, right? I mean,
this is a judgment-free zone. I'm not going to put a number on it.
No, I'm...
We nerded out.
I'm quite weird. Like, my alter ego, I've sort of called myself the legitimate animal. And I do that because it makes me chuckle slightly. And I'm not trying to be cool, but I'm a slightly, you know, I dress like this. And I look fairly well presented, but... Yeah, no, I'm a lunatic underneath, like genuinely walking around and kind of going through things. The obsessions and the fine qualities, I think, the things I find funny, I'm certainly quite high on the weird scale. I'm like pushing a strong 8, if not higher. I'd be worried if I said 10 that people would be very put off and find that too weird. But I would say, yeah, definitely. And the thing is, I encourage it. I like it. That's the special stuff, right? That those kind of oddities and that weirdness, that I find that very attractive in an individual. You know, to want to invest, like, what is the thing what are you obsessed by? What's the weird thing? And then, you know, obviously it rubs off on me. And then I'll become obsessed by it. And I think actually a lot of that comes down to this hyper focus that you kind of have as a neurodivergent individual. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to drill into that. But yeah, no, I'm definitely out there on the scale, I think. Definitely.
I think that's a good place to end. Where do we go from there? Thank you, Tom. That was really good.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.